you know, the purpose of us to come together was to be able to assist people embrace the unknown. When I say assist people to a life in wilderness, it is essentially explore archetype, which is assisting people to take the uncharted, untreaded path, take the road less traveled, so to speak. That's the entire hypothesis on which Wildcraft has been created, and we continue to work on that. And our products are supposed to reliably assist you to taking that untreaded path.
Deep conversations about what really matters with the best minds in business, startups, sports, music, and many more. This is the Best in Class podcast.
So Gaurav, let me officially welcome you to the podcast. It's wonderful to have you here. It's always a pleasure to talk to you. I take away a lot of your enthusiasm and passion every time I speak.
So my learning style is very different. My learning style is pick up the phone and speak to Sarish.
Correct. And itna enthu, like that thing always strikes me that after so many years, decades in running this company, you're still childlike enthusiasm, and I think that's a good sign that you are liking what you're doing. Plus, you're meant for this, right? So, I think I enjoy that part of it. While I was thinking of guests, I could obviously think of a lot of things I learned from you. So, hence I reached out to you, and thank you for this gift of time, this wonderful gift. For my listeners who may not know you or may not realize which Gaurav you are, so I just want to do a quick intro. I'm talking to Gaurav Dublish. He's the founder, CEO of Wildcraft. I'm sure everybody has heard of Wildcraft, the kind of products you make. I actually saw this in one of your, I sent this link to you, right? In a Reddit post, in a subreddit called Buy It For Life, I found a picture of one of your bags.
Yeah.
And I was like, yes, this is one sentence summary of what Wildcraft stands for. Wildcraft makes products I think you can buy for life. They are an outdoor company, so I think you make packs and outdoor equipment, tents, weather jackets and whatnot. Recently, when COVID happened, when we spoke last, I think you got into PPE and masks in a big way. You had visions of becoming the world's largest or India's largest, at the least, manufacturer of PPE and COVID equipment at that time. So I think of Gaurav as a man with big vision, a lot of impatience to execute, and one of those few people who focus on product quality more than selling. I've so far found him to be a guy who believes that good product will sell itself, and then you tell the story on top. It's a plus. So Gaurav, welcome to the podcast.
Thanks, Harish.
Did I miss anything in your introduction? Anything that I should?
No, you did not. I'm one of the co-founders, as I work very closely with my colleague and batchmates. And that's the only edit that I'll do. Otherwise, more or less, you've actually interpreted a lot of it. I don't think we even interpreted it, because one interesting thing that you just mentioned is that the affinity toward making good products rather than making sales. So, if you look at the cart and the horse, we typically believe in getting the right product out first. But trust me, it's a daily challenge.
Yeah. Touch upon that, but I want to start with the topic of enthusiasm, right? So it's very easy to start off with a bang, I love this thing, I'm going to make it big. But then to sustain that enthusiasm for decades, and stick to one problem statement in the face of a lot of heat and competition and a lot of other things happening around you. How does one stick to a particular idea for a long time and enjoy that journey over a long period of time? What has been your learning or secret?
So I think there are personality types. But I think at a generic level, you have to fuel your own enthusiasm when you're an entrepreneur. Unfortunately, when I say your own, you have to seek it amongst people around you, but you'll set your own pace. You'll set your own milestone, you'll set your own goals for you to be enthusiastic about. At some point of time, they are very transactional, profitability and revenue targets. At some point of time, it's to do with the kind of customers that you sell to, and what are they saying about your products, or whether there's an affinity to it. At some point of time, it is to do with the staff who's very closely involved, whether they like to spend the rest of the life or possibly the best part of 2 years with you to make your dream come live or make your dream become their dream. And I think I've just given you 3-4 scenarios. There may be multiple scenarios. So you seek that piece out and add to your reasons for to be enthusiastic, which is one. Second, I think, and it's slightly more, theoretical, but that envisioning piece is very, very critical. You know, for you to really push yourself to the next level, your purpose setting needs to be very, very strong. And I'm not using the term vision or mission, but I'm using one purpose, which is, what is it that you're trying to change or you're trying to add to your customer base? What is your basic solve? Now, in the hunger to make that solve very, very magnetic, you try to broaden it. But you always should have what is the core essence of your purpose for pursuing what you're pursuing. So I think that will forever, literally forever, fuel your enthusiasm as long as you are convinced. You know, it doesn't matter if anybody else is convinced. As long as you are convinced. It's as an EAK, you are always enthusiastic. You go through your ups and downs, and more downs than ups. You start, scratching your head and saying, "Well, what the hell am I doing?" But those periods are become less and lesser as long as your conviction on your purpose is very clear.
Well said, Varun. And can you talk about your journey with Wildcraft? How did you get started? The initial years, how did you both decide that this is the thing that you do want to do for a long time? Talk to me about the early years.
So, I passed out in 2000. Siddharth and I were batchmates from the same school. We had this, the entrepreneurship has become a fashionable name now. Then it was called business. You know, we had this kid out doing something on our own. We did not know what. You won't believe the kind of, I still remember we went to an HPMC, the guys who make juices, Himachal, some juices. So that is from Himachal. So we drove down from Chandigarh, then visited a plant for food processing. Then we realized this is not a cup of tea. Then we came down. I remember speaking to the Planet IQ. There was an educational institute like NIT in Delhi. We met the founder, something or the other. We said, we'll do something. That didn't happen. So it was always there. This doing something on our own was always there when we were in college. It was just, honestly speaking, a coincidence that in one of the trips, my first trip actually to Bangalore, I did my summer internship in Bangalore with Wipro Consumer. And in one of those trips, I met with Dinesh, who is actually a climber and a mountaineer. And he exposed me personally to the world of outdoors, so to speak, way back in 99. So it's been 22 years. I didn't pass out then. I was enamored. One thing led to the other. I started asking him, why don't we commercialize something like this? And so the original thought was actually having a range of a set of campsites where we'd expose people to the beauty of outdoors, in which expose them from the urbanized environment towards nature and leave them in the nature and let them learn in nature. It was campsites and then experiential learning. It was crafting products and services for wilderness is how we made our first statement together. And we named it Wildcraft because of that. But then nothing happened because we did not know what to do with it. I took up a job and so that my colleague and I was in Standard Chartered for 6 years. He was with GE for 5-6 years. And we were moving from one place to the other. And so is Dinesh. Dinesh was a outdoor lover, so he moved back to US to become an instructor. It was in 2004 in between that we actually came together again. And we said, Keith, if you have to do it, let's do something serious. that's a time which we said we'll do something in the equipment space. Let's not do it in the campsite space, equipment space. But none of us were very clear. None of us came from a production background, etc. 2007 is when the two of us got the courage. Dinesh had indicated that he'd like to move back. So we said, "Ki, if you have to do it, you have to do it now. Otherwise, we'll get domesticated and nothing will happen." So to speak. That's when we jumped. And that was the time we just jumped without thinking left, right. We jumped in and we said, "Ki, we'll start." And we did not refer to anybody in the market who's doing bot. Everybody in the market, based on the experience, was sitting out of China. They were trading in China, et cetera, et cetera. Our thesis was that India is going to become cost competitive within the decade's time, and there's no point of going. Plus, from a simplistic logic, which is to do with if you have to run a restaurant, well, let's have our own chef, or let's learn the cooking ourselves. We set up a production unit first. High-end design development. India, historically, during those years, especially, and even now, and the product design is essentially weak. We hired designers from NID and IFTs, IITs and FDDIs, etc. And I think 2008 onwards, it's been 13 years now, full-time involved. So it's been not decades, but yes, a decade. It's been a 13-year-old journey. So honestly speaking, what I was doing in 2009, I'm still doing the same. So your role doesn't change. The dimension of the role changes. You're able to articulate it better, honestly speaking. 2008-9, if somebody would have said, what's the purpose and what is it, it would have been very fuzzy, because while we broadly knew it's an explorer archetype that you're addressing, et cetera, et cetera, but to make it relevant to a common person was very, very difficult. But I think that stuck better. So that's been the journey, you know, this first 7 years. It was not on a clock. It was very, very heavily to do with our personal interests. It was very heavily in the pre-investor exuberance wala time frame. It was when our parents and our families were questioning why we are cooking and everything else. It was an era in which bootstrapping was the way to grow. I think we enjoyed every moment of it and still do. So that's a brief of how we came together in Wildcat. So there were the two of us have been earning for the last 13 years. That's what it is.
And was there any moment that crystallized that jump? So in 2007, did anything change dramatically?
Yes. I mean, I had a baby daughter. So I told you, there was a risk of getting domesticated. And it was the day she was born. Sent my destination papers, actually. So it was the Delhi, so anyway coming for quite a few months, but it was there in our minds, and we were just pushing the ball further down for some time. 2004 would have possibly happened, and 2007 February people. So on February 15th, I put on a paper. So I had an immediate after that, I spoke to my team in Sanchar and everything else, and that I'll give a few months time to hand over and everything else. But this is what I need to prepare myself. But it was just to do with that. I think the trigger was, I think that was the trigger, honestly speaking.
In today's software eating the startup world, right? It's easy to start a company. You can just, hire two engineers, buy AWS space, and then just kick it off, right? You spoke about setting up production, manufacturing, design. That requires a little bit more, or rather a lot of higher risk taking or higher investment potential or ability. What made it possible for you?
See, one is the economics of it, which is how do we get debt, et cetera, et cetera. Be able to sit with the banks, convince them on your business plan, et cetera, and make poker face pitches so that they either trust you or they pity on you, and you get something done, which is one side of it. The second side of it is that under the umbrella of the purpose, there were also smaller purposes, which has to do with why can't a globally benchmark firm be based out of India? We came from a time in which, practically speaking, there were hardly any. Now there obviously there's a flurry of. Or at least quite a few of them, more than them. But at that point, there was hardly anything. You had to pick up a, in our industry, for example, you had to pick up a Columbia or North Face or whatever else, transport, so to speak, or get fakes from outside or whatever else. And we couldn't align to the fact that why in India we can't. We have the best of the talents. If you're able to put everybody together, we should be in a position to be able to do this. And that's possibly one of the things that became a very critical piece very, very early on. That how do we ensure that we give the consumer the product which is internationally benchmarked on? In fact, despite so much of communication and everything else, in 2021 also, the last survey we did, some 70-75% of our customers do not know we are Indian born. Which I'm assuming is to do with the quality of products that we put across the market. It may be to do with some other reasons also. So, you know, to answer your question, Harish, that's the way we built the value chain. We said for us to be able to get a control product, one is making product. Now in making product or other, one is having a product. You can source or buy, make. When you're sourcing or making, you can copy it, copy your design, right? But those are the conscious choices that you have to take. So I would not say we took the harder ones. I think what we took as the ones with a harder lens has worked exceptionally well for us now. Because if we did not choose Make in India then, if we did not choose design our own then, as a DNA at the very, very inception, it would have taken us somewhere else. I'm not saying it would have taken us somewhere bad. It would have taken us somewhere else. And that conviction then and the conviction now gives us that piece. The entire team of 3,000 odd people at Wildcat, they know exactly what are the guardrails that they need to follow. So that becomes those early calls. They need to be very, very heavily conviction-led and not necessarily economics-led. That's been one big piece. And hence, making our own production facility, et cetera, et cetera. In fact, that investment, for example, with that production facility, we are the only ones who are in this space are in panel with the Indian Armed Forces. Okay, Indian Armed Forces only.
Right.
So they became incidental, to all those conversations that help. But it comes at a cost. It comes at upfront cost. It comes at a cost in which operations cost, because you have to do so much of it, manage so many people, et cetera, et cetera. So those are forks, take a fork and then stick to it, or if it's not working out, cut the losses and then move ahead. So it's okay, but your point on engineering, I think, to be fair, it's a very different ballgame altogether. We are talking about, an economy which is very, very differently organized than the economy that we cater to, so to speak, which is physical tangible products. And that industry, while they have this, I think, pros of small capsule kind of a team and then suddenly taking off, and et cetera, et cetera, the mortality rate will be so much of that industry, which will also not be funny, because the entry barriers is that much less.
Yeah.
So while the glass is greener, but I'm sure of it, the struggles are equal if not more.
Got it. That's fair. And you mentioned this in passing, but I'll just pick on it. The funding craze in this space, any brand that is D2C, I'm sure if you go and raise funds now, you'll be like valued at multiple $1 billion. Patani, like, sky is the limit. Folks who have sold a few thousand pieces are now, getting multi-million dollar valuations and whatnot. What are your thoughts? Like, see, one is obviously your interest in staying bootstrapped and growing this company for the long term. And second is, to all these young entrepreneurs who want to get into the building a consumer brand for the Indian audience, what should they watch out and what should they learn from?
See, I will not go into the funding. Funding is just an economic transaction. Either you put your own money, you raise it through debt, you raise it from investor. That's the choice that you have to make based on the dilution that you're going to do, and et cetera, et cetera. I think for entrepreneurs who are keen on building a consumer brand, see, there is obviously, when we were studying, and I'm sure of it, you'll be able to relate to that slightly better. Building brand used to be a a couple of decades kind of a process. So there needs to be a very clearly perseverance for making a consumer brand, which is a which has ability to be able to get the contours right within a decade or 2 decades time. Obviously, things would have shifted now with the digital and everything else. Those couple of decades now would have become, say, 8-10 years, but still takes time. Or you have a brute force of money going in the market and creating awareness. So you can create awareness, but brand building is not just awareness. So a long-term perspective is very, very critical, which is why it's easy to say, I can't put myself in the shoes of young entrepreneurs who are running DTC firms in which the burn itself will be on a daily basis, and how much they will be looking at brand and how much they will be looking at this. The good piece is, Indian market, I've worked in 2-3 markets, but Indian market specifically is reasonably, forgiving for you to take mistakes. So to that extent, you can do some bit of jugglery and be able to build the brand. I think critically, the purpose and the passion to pursue a purpose needs to be there. I think I touched upon it in the beginning of this conversation. Building a brand, you need to set the purpose of the brand, and you need to have the passion to pursue that purpose of the brand. You can change or broaden or narrow it later, but stick to it. Don't let it become just a tool around which your economic rationale will hinge. Because consumers beyond a point of time will not get it. You will, they'll move to the cheaper options immediately if they do not do this. This is what my only suggestion is going to be. And I've seen it, multiple times in the last 10 years. A lot of people have tried to copy and be able to pursue, but because of me, the conviction was not possibly there. It didn't survive beyond a huge burst in the first year. So that's what will be my answer to this, is how to make a brand.
And how have you dealt with competition so long, Gaurav? I think this is the space where I believe China has a lot of muscle, right? I'm sure even today, other than you, right? Most other brands are actually just sourcing. They are basically drop shipping in a way, right? They source, they put their brand down and they ship. That's how most brands are working. Even now. How has it worked for you? And how has the dealing with competition who have a lot of muscle in manufacturing and pricing at scale, but surviving this long and doing well, how has that worked for you? How have you've been able to not only survive, but also lead and in a way, thrive in this kind of a market?
See, on the first question, which is a make or buy question, which is, do we produce ourselves or do we? There are specialists who have done well in both. So I would not say that was our thesis that we have to make if you have to sell. But you can very well buy, not need to make. So I would not pass my point of view on that. I believe it make more than buy. But as long as you know what you need to make, you can buy also. Our reason for choosing to make was because we did not know. But if I have to source also, what am I going to ask the vendor? I did not know that. Right? But you can always hire that talent. So to speak, science. Your make or buy decision should not change too much. On competition, the way we have been able to manage or plan the competition is, honestly speaking, very few brands look at us as competition. We look at all of them as competition. So I'll just explain this a bit. In the outdoor space, if you look at it, there are very few brands in India even now. But between sports and a bit of outdoors, there is sprinkling of, for example, sports, you have three to four players, international players. In travel, you have the Samsonites and VIP various things. In outdoors, you have Decathlon and you have Columbia. Decathlon is also not outdoors, it's a sports, so to speak. Columbia is there, which is an outdoor brand, but has struggled in India for the last 10 years now. So with the brand, which are 12 to 13 brands, they typically don't look at us. You know, if you ask a Colombia guy, they will say, no, they are in this. The Catalan will say they are into all of that. So it suits us. So, you know, one of the successes for us has been that we've carved out a space which potentially, if we get our act right, and we keep on doing what we're doing and do it better, we can become generic to the category in the country. And I think that's an opportunity for us to let go of.
Makes sense, sir. Makes sense. I'll ask you a very different question now, right? I ask this of all my entrepreneur friends, and I've found a consistent answer, so I'm checking my hypothesis, right? Talk about your childhood. What led you to be risk-taking or, you know, being able to jump into these kind of decisions, having a child and then deciding to start a company? Talk about your journey to this mindset.
Interesting question. What mindset? On, are you saying risk-taking?
So I'll give you my hypothesis, right? Most of my friends who are running companies have come from backgrounds who have moved a lot or have come from families where things were broken. In terms of, you know, not a stable childhood, something they traveled a lot, they moved a lot, they went to different schools, different cities, they worked here, there, everywhere, or they are backbenchers. You know, the musty core kids in the class.
So if you say these three, I didn't move at all. You know, I'm born and brought up in Meerut. My schooling was very stable. For obviously for graduation, undergraduate, I traveled. But hardly. So the first part of the hypothesis doesn't work in my case. Second, no, it was not. I had a stable family, disciplined family rather. So that didn't work in my case. I'm the youngest in the family, so I got bullied by everyone in the family. So that was second. Third, yes, I was a backbencher, but I was reasonably studious. But reasonably, I'm not saying reasonably. I was not. I was not a wayward kind of a person. So my parents or my siblings never asked me to study or this and that. I used to do so. But yes, I was a backbencher, and I used to like sitting at the backbencher because I used to love the company who were one of these guys who were wayward, so to speak. So that's how it was. Otherwise, my childhood was, it was very heavily into sports. I was very, very heavily into, there are only two things I used to like, sports and maths. So either I used to play around with maths and maths puzzles and everything else I do, or play chess. It was not extraordinary. So that, to that extent, it was not so interesting as what your hypothesis is. So I'm sorry. So
but there is a spark of something there, right? Gaurav, because so what I meant, let me rephrase my observation, right? The observation is there is some connect early in the childhood to the chance that you take on a specific topic or the fact that you are taking a chance at all. There is some linkage to things that have happened in your childhood, right? So in many cases, the reason why they could take a risk was they always saw change happen. And this
Okay. Let me tell you the biggest one, Ben. I don't think anybody I know took that part. I studied for engineering, as most of us did. You know, very difficult to say I got into NIT Bharat, REC, I think it's NIT Bharat. I went there, which was in Hyderabad, Andhra. I was just there, and in 3 to 6 months, I didn't survive there. I did not like the regimental. I didn't do well, or my health-wise. So I went back. And when I was sitting and wondering, I did my graduation in political science, history, and sociology. I shifted from here. I never heard of these subjects, so to speak. And my father was there. He was a bit curious what's happened here. So, and he was okay. He's like, if you can enjoy as long as you can enjoy. So three. Let me tell you, those 3 years was the most learning-wise, was the most important in my life. The kind of perspective I got on the soft side of things, because you become very, very left-brained in life. I still believe I am reasonably left-brained, but that was, you know, I took that call and I was very comfortable. You know, all my friends were not. I was very comfortable. Tu kya karega? You know, what will you do? What not to do? Take like, yeah, you know, we will see when it comes to it. It was good fun. Yes, that was a bit. That was the only wayward thing I think I did then.
Let's talk about what happened during COVID. So I think a lot of things changed. Suddenly, you were faced with an opportunity and a challenge. Just talk through your company's journey and your own personal journey the last 2 years, how that has transformed the way you guys operate.
So I think that day it happened, or rather the week it happened, to be precise. You know, both Siddharth and I, we got together, and when the realization dawned on us, we knew that we were screwed. We were screwed completely, because I think after airlines and hospitality, our industry was impacted the most, because people are not traveling, commuting, hiking the bully up. And we honestly did not know what to do and how to go about it. You know, it just so happened that our team, our R&D team, was working on 2-3-4 projects in parallel. We used to make these, there was a demand for doing these PM 2.5 masks for Delhi. We asked whether not. So we're dabbling into that. And they said, a lot of our like friends and everybody else, they used to ask, at least give us a mask for that. We don't fall sick before we hit the Himalaya, so to speak. So they were dabbling with something like this. And we obviously knew that there is a market for it. A couple of things heads up are, they said, we do not know what to do, how long it'll last, but can we expedite this particular age? So we took a call. We said, okay, obviously, that was there were a lot of other ideas, though. This was one idea. We, again, and I passed the point, I think, but, the purpose of us to come together was to be able to assist people, embrace the unknown. When I say assist people to a life in wilderness, it is essentially explorer archetype, which is assisting people to take the uncharted, untreaded path. Take the road less traveled, so to speak. That's the entire hypothesis on which Wildcraft has been created, and we continue to work on that. And our products are supposed to reliably assist you to taking that untreaded path. So when this piece came in, the first question was the passport. But there was, psychologically, there was this huge unknown that all of us were getting exposed to. And that unknown was the one which was distressing, obviously, at one side, but was also very exciting, because we essentially embrace the unknown. You know, when you step out, the ambiguity, the versatility that you expect in your products to harness the ambiguity is what essentially is a product. So a personal protection gear. In fact, we do not use the word protection so much, because we are enabling that. We are saying that you step out. In fact, we launched the entire campaign at the AR, et cetera, which is we are ready. We're ready for anything. And so should you be, and be with us, and we'll mask it. So we took a couple of calls. We said we will not do disposables, because we said, ecologically, environmentally, it's a wrong thing. We said, can we develop something which can last longer, can give the assurance of an N95 and beyond? And psychologically, wearing that will give people an ability to be able to step out with confidence. And our R&D team came out, worked, you won't believe, I don't know how they worked, how we worked, honestly. Without office access, factory access, initially 10 days, everything was locked up. We wanted an access on this. We reached out to the industry's bureaucrat, who's now the BBNP commissioner, Mr. Gupta. We asked for permission. We need help. We need our factories to be open. What do you want to make? So he didn't understand this. So these are called respirators. These are not called masks, honestly.
Yeah.
So we said, we have no respirator. He didn't understand only. So then we said, sir, this is it. So then he understood what we were doing. He said, we'll give you the license to open up. So in 3 days' time, we got the license. We're the first factory in Bangalore or in Karnataka, I think, to open up. To make these pieces. We got our production facility, we called some 20 people, got our R&D, we started traveling. The good piece was traveling then was a breeze. So there was nobody on the roads. So I think all of that was one of the best times that I personally enjoyed, actually. We came together, respirators, in the financial year, last financial year. We actually had done the highest ever normally, and we sold possibly 30-40% of what we sell normally. In that time, So we went to 500 townships, 600 townships, medical, this, that, everything possible. Did a campaign, put across our point of view, market. So we had a good time. You know, we made it very, very productive. In fact, the equity of the brand in the tier 3, tier 4 have significantly shot up. This year, we are growing at 40% on our normal business. I keep on telling my team and everybody in sales hardly comments that, before we entered the outlet, they know that yes, you guys are there because they've sold something or the other in the last 1 year. So I think that was the time. I think to sum it up, it was, and I know if you look at the IPGs and Woodlands and the captains of the world last year numbers, we are normal numbers, we struggled. But the fact that we were we latched on to something and we were able to connect a part with our brand purpose and we were to add something significant to the lives of people, I think that was very, very heartening, you know. But that was very, very heartening. And I think we did a good job also. Our initial product was crappy for the simple reason there was no production facility, there was hardly any fabric available, this and that. But within 15-20 days we got it. And Mitra, for example, was a big support. I think for 15-20 days, this was the only item you guys were selling on your website, literally speaking. So maybe we misused your platform significantly. So, but it was good fun. It was good fun. Tough time, definitely. Luckily, obviously we had 18-20 of our head office staff who fell ill. We had two or three people in our production facility who went critically ill. So we had a tough time on the personal front, as this, I think, most of it did. But it was a good testing of the hypothesis that we had, which is whether the purpose is strong enough for us to channelize and galvanize the entire team. Without exception, the entire team was 3,000 people were able to galvanize themselves. Which was great.
I knew bits of it, but the full story is quite amazing. And the fact that you pulled it off, had a good year in spite of all that happened. And now, like you said, you have a stronger brand equity in places which you never existed before. I think that's a great story. What else? What are some of the new things you're launching? Like, give me your latest product updates, right? Share with me what your R&D team is up to.
So again, simply put, anything which helps us help people embrace the unknown or take the road less traveled is what we typically end up doing. We have identified three verticals. We have, which is our head to toe kind of a vertical structure. We have footwear, we have clothing, and we have accessories. In accessories, there is enough and more options. For example, we have backpacks, rucksacks, etc., etc. We've launched travel cases, which is known as suitcases. So travel cases, we've got. They are doing very well for us. That's in accessory space. In clothing, we have just introduced a range of essentials, basics, which include innerwear, track pants, and those knits, the knitted ones that we are introducing. That's going to take six months, I think, before someone will launch the entire lip page. That's second. In footwear, we've actually sharpened our catalog. Our catalog became very large. We sharpened our catalog last year. During COVID times, we actually sharpened it. And we have moved everything to our own proprietary molds. We were having issues on quality of molds which were not proprietary Wildcraft. So we completely used those 12 months to get our design, redesign, pass the designs to facts. So in each, there is something other. The big launches is the essentials in clothing, the innerwear, etc., etc., and the travel cases. Travel cases is what we are spending a lot of money on.
Let's talk a bit about hiring, right? You must have hired hundreds of people, thousands of people over the years. Are there any frameworks, shorthands, hacks? How do you hire good people?
I have a preference for youngsters who are willing to learn. Who actually quiz me more than I quiz them. you know, that's a big recipe for potential success, personally speaking. It also displays the confidence there. So I think that's a trick. I do not know beyond that. So that's one that I see. I have, much to the chagrin of my colleagues, I do not look for domain expertise. I think it's not the right strategy initially, but I got used to it because initially we did not know even what domain to look for. So, and that worked very well. So I've looked at that. I think I know a lot of my colleagues who come from domain now, they believe that's not the right strategy at the scale at which we are. But since you asked me the question, I'll say these two things is what I'll look at: the right attitude and look at curiosity in individuals. If it comes with domain expertise, nothing beats it.
Anything in the philosophy of a founder that people should learn from? Like, you spoke about resilience, you spoke about jumping in without knowing all the answers, you spoke about focus on product. All these are very, you know, valid things. But anything level two, like maybe now that you have gone through 13 years of this grind, something that sticks out that all founders should keep in mind. Rather, let me rephrase the question. When things go bad, what do you usually remind yourself?
Or the things don't go the way you want them to go. I'll tell you what has worked. And I think the COVID example was a very, very good example. See, you dip, start in the first place. And you'll have to exponentially. Okay, see, let me re-articulate myself. See, when things are going okay, you need to take a backseat. I believe I need to take a backseat, let the entire karma be able to take lead, and there'll be leadership that will be created. That gives your organization state of the institution and legs beyond you personally. But when things go bad, you cannot do that. You need to be able to jump the gun, take the leadership, because that's when the leadership is extremely critical. And the only thing which will give you that conviction is conviction of purpose that I touched upon. You have that, and you'll have to. That's where you'll have to galvanize the entire team. So I do not know if there's a level two, but when things go bad, you have to take the baton and run with it, and get the entire teams to follow you. And that gives not only the confidence to the teams, I think that also gives the confidence whether the premise around which you're working has legs to stand, so to speak.
In a way, as a leader, you are enabling them to embrace the unknown.
Absolutely. let me put it, since it's second level. So take a situation in which you're in a hike, and you've reached a point in which you have to take the leap of faith. Now you can have somebody else take the leap of faith. The point is that there's nothing wrong in that, as long as you've trained and everything else and you've done it. But if you are there in that group, you should take the leap of faith. If you're not there, obviously you should have leaders to take the leap of faith, because that leap of faith will get you to test the hypothesis again, whether you've done the rigors of checkpoints and everything else. And second is, your team will also start believing, yes, when it comes to it, there's a leader who's claiming to be the leader who can run it. So the same thing applies in business. And I think the same thing applied during the COVID time, for example, for us. The 3,000 team, there were 5-6 of us who were practically running the entire show hands on, 18-20 hours a day. Normally, those 7-8 of us don't do anything. I don't think we do significantly more than what we can do. But those are the months, couple of months that we did everything which is possible.
Got it. Cool. Last major question. What can you tell me about outdoors? I'm not an outdoorsy person, but I want to learn more about it and experience more of it. How would you describe it to somebody like me? What can I experience?
So let me give you a lateral answer. You know sports?
Yeah.
See, what is sports? Sports is stepping out of your comfort zone into an artificial arena in which rules have been defined for you to play around, set of rules, and you're supposed to win or lose, right? But The first piece is stepping out of a comfort zone. Okay. Outdoors is stepping out of a comfort zone into the natural arena.
Yeah.
In which there's a natural rules. You know, the rules of the nature of life. Okay. But there is no guarantee on anything, unlike the artificial theater, which you have guaranteed. So you pursue outdoors not to win or lose. You pursue outdoors to explore.
Yeah. Yeah.
And when you explore, you dip into your inner resilience. You're going to figure out what is it in you that you can actually push that much forth. It is essentially like, so since you're into learning, out of the 100,000 odd years that the species, our species have survived, 95% has been as hunter-gatherers.
Yeah. Yeah.
The 5% only which has been agrarian, then industrialized, etc. That's the way we are hardwired. Okay. The hunter-gatherer were always in this domain of taking that uncharted path to be able to find the game. Otherwise, they wouldn't have survived. There's a survival instinct. The point here is to do with, that's what in a slightly more lesser scenario is the outdoor world, in which you're exposing. You're not there to just survive. You're there to explore. But that's the beauty of outdoors, and that's what it does. So if you understand the sports thesis, outdoors just becomes easily. So here it is to win. This is not to, this is to explore. This is to manage the chartered path. This is to take the uncharted path. This is to explore. That is not to explore. So that's the way the piece. So individually, in you, you would not be an outdoors person as per you. But are you not a backpacker? Are you not an explorer? There is, as an archetype, all of us are.
True.
Is it more sporty? Is it more outdoorsy? Is it more explorer? More backpacker? That's what depends. So Wildcraft makes itself relevant to the backpacker in you. Whether or not you do backpack doesn't matter.
Got it. Very cool. Yeah. Last few quick fire questions. Varad. You know, this is again in the spirit of learning, right? So I'll ask questions which are unique to you. So your answer is the right answer. Anything that you have changed your mind on in the last 1 year?
Anything you've changed your mind on?
In the last 1 year.
Yes. I think you need to dig in. You have to dig in to your beliefs slightly more stronger than what I have done 1.5 years back. I think after 10, 11 years, I was thinking it's okay. You know, let's loosen. But I think what I have started believing now in the last 1.5 years is we should dig in, because that sharpens your approach as well as gives a clear sense of direction to a lot of people as well as communities.
Very cool. That's a good one. Any books that you have read that you would like to recommend? Anything that you liked? It can be books or movies or anything, right?
Unfortunately, I've stopped. I've started, for some reason, the last couple of years, I started starting a lot of books. I've stopped finishing those books for some reason. But I did Anti-Fragile, Anti-Fragility recently. This is Nicholas Taleb. In fact, it was pre-COVID, but I picked it up again because in COVID it became that much more relevant. I think that's a phenomenal book for the kind of typical approach that we take of making things robust out of it. Completely overturn that notion. It was very, very interesting. So that was one. Apart from that, then it was 0 to 1s and Hard Things was good. It was some time back, I think 2-3 years back, that was good. And it was a good one personally to me as an entrepreneur. 0 to 1 was interesting. It's a concept. Interesting. These are 2-3 books that I've read in the last 2 years. Otherwise, I've become lazy and started reaching up.
On that note, my friend, it was a pleasure. Very nice talking to you. Thanks for your time. Thanks for doing this.
It is always mine having a conversation with you, and wish you all the very best.
Thanks.